All right, if you're anything like me, you hate running out of food on a trip. It's like a big fear. And so I'm a big fan of snacks during an adventure. And one of my absolute favorite go-to snacks are Wonderful Pistachios. You may be familiar with pistachios and the brand Wonderful Pistachios, but if you're not, they are one of the highest protein nuts out there. 1 ounce serving of Wonderful Pistachios is 6 grams of protein. That's 10% of your daily value. It also includes 9 essential amino acids, and they come with a ton of different flavors, varieties. There's a spicy version, there's lightly salted, there's no salted, there's so many. And every time I go on an adventure, I'm not even lying, I take an entire bag with me. And what's cool too, I love having the Wonderful Pistachio in shell, because then that almost gives me something to do and focus on as I'm paddling or biking through the really monotonous parts of the adventure. Every great adventure is going to have plenty of boring moments, and it's nice to have something to do and also something that is giving you some fuel, like Wonderful Pistachios. So they're one of my favorite adventure snacks, favorite road trip snacks, and definitely leave me feeling better than a lot of other snacks you can turn to. So if you want to learn more about how to fuel your next adventure with Wonderful Pistachios, go to WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey folks, welcome to the Adventure Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Mason. Today we're talking to Jerome Rand. You probably recognize him. He's one of the, probably like the first person that's been on the show 4 times, like new episodes. And what's cool is 3 of those interviews, including today, was in person. Pretty rare that I get to do an in-person interview. It's a huge treat because it's a totally different dynamic. And Jerome and I have become friends. Well, I mean, I call him a friend. I don't know if he'd call me a friend. I'm just kidding. I know he would. But every time he comes to town, which is like once a year, he's just passing through for something. We get together and do an interview in the studio. And this one was awesome. We didn't have a ton of time. We made it happen. And we're going to talk about the experience of an adventurer or someone who knows a lot about something and is like, okay, do I just keep doing this thing? Or do I start to use this experience to help the next generation of enthusiasts, of adventurers, or the youth? You know, there's, you know, the need to leave a legacy. And so Jerome's going through that, and he just had a new experience. If you don't know, he's owns and has operated his sailboat for years and done some massive adventures, which include sailing out around the world, literally around the entire world. Unsupported, he's attempted a northwest passage crossing, crossing the Atlantic and up and down the coast of the U.S. many, many times. He's done so much sailing, and a lot of other things like through hiking the Appalachian Trail. So he's got these chops and this amazing understanding of the ocean. You can really hear him when he talks about it. It's just like, wow, this guy reads the ocean like a book. I'm amazed by people that can do that. And so you might not be this knowledgeable of sailing, or maybe you're getting really passionate about something. But what can you do to start giving back? And I don't think, you know, Jerome's going to talk about it. I don't think you need to wait until you're old or wait until you've already done everything. I think you can bring people along as you learn yourself. I am by no means an expert in the stuff I do, but when I can, I invite others, even just to go camping or something. A lot of times that can be really, really daunting to somebody that's never done it. But once you show people and they learn the ropes, it really, you see the momentum within themselves start to really carry them through learning the next thing. You don't have to teach people every little thing. You get them started and they start going. So Jerome's going to share some reflections. I thought this was a really cool take and cool episode for a lot of people out there who might know a lot about something. I encourage you. Once you learn it, once you understand the joy of whatever that thing is for you, whether it's an adventure sport or something totally different, I think we all have an obligation to share that and teach others and inspire that passion in others. I think all of us are responsible once we love something like that. So think about that as you listen, and let's jump in.
Well, you're already recording, right?
I'm recording, sweet. Yeah, just in case you say anything that's incriminating or just interesting.
I will say, like, off the top here, caveat, you know, I'm very fortunate that I don't suffer from seasickness.
Oh, yeah.
But I suffer heavily from land sickness, and I'm fresh off the boat. We pulled in off the ocean at 3 a.m. last night.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. No, I'm not kidding. So not 3 a.m. this morning, 3 a.m. yesterday.
Holy cow.
And
so you're fresh.
And I'm feeling it. Oh, I'm my head's swimming a little. So if I, you know, misspeak or something like that, forgive me.
Okay, what's in that cup?
No, I'm just kidding. Just water and some lemon.
Okay. Yeah, all right, so what's Jerome Ram? Thank you for joining us. I think it's the fourth time.
Yeah,
this is definitely the most
honor.
It's not, and I've revisited. I played your episodes again, so I think if you search our archives, I think your name will come up like 8 times.
Very cool.
Yeah, you're an awesome repeat guest. We recorded about a year ago.
It was right after the disaster voyage. Yeah.
Yeah. Right after that, you were in town. I was right in that room over there. So if you hear an echo, it's a little different sound, but we did record. And before that we recorded, I think it was at your sister's house.
Yeah. Yeah.
In
yeah.
St. Pete. Well, that was?
Yeah. My Sven and Ina. That's their place. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
No
shout
kidding.
Out to Sven.
Oh, that's awesome.
He loves hearing that.
So, all right. What is land sickness?
Okay, so yeah, it's kind of
odd. Because I get seasick. I definitely get seasick.
Okay,
but
okay.
I've never heard the opposite.
Well, from my experience with it, it's kind of like a little bit of a foggy, almost drunkenness, but without the nausea. Really, it the worst I've ever felt it was after that last trip back in 2022, and the earth felt like I was walking on a trampoline, but visually I'm walking on the sidewalk and trying to make those things sort of compute. And when you find yourself in any position where you can't see anything, like the worst is when you hop in to take a shower for the first time. People fall all the time
because
you're in this encapsulated
thing. Is
it just
the water moving around you? Or?
Your body gets so used to that motion, the constant, always moving.
Do you call that sea legs?
Yes.
Okay.
You get your sea legs and you're good to go from that point as long as you're out there.
Yeah.
And if you have a really rough passage, then essentially the minute you get off the sea, you're still bouncing. And sometimes for me, that really bad one lasted 3 days, and I was almost concerned for a little bit. I was like, this is gonna go away. I know it will.
What can you compare it to if you haven't been on a trip? Does it feel, is there anything like vertigo or being drunk? Like, is there any sort of similar feeling?
I would say probably a mix of both of those.
Okay.
Because you're unbalanced.
Dang.
You know, things that you're seeing visually also are moving very, very fast.
Yeah.
And, you know, probably not the best thing. I'm driving a car in Florida, you know,
across the state. Yeah.
But, you know, no, it's not that bad. it's mostly the walking around, and you just trying to walk a straight line. It's not very easy.
God, don't get pulled over.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
I know.
What you been doing?
They'd be like, you know,
I've been sailing.
They don't have a breathalyzer for land sickness. So, but yeah, it's pretty incredible. There was one time a long time ago in my early years where I fell off of a dock. I was just kind of excited. You know, we were back on land, and we were only out for a couple of days, but we were in the south, or in the Tasman Sea in between Australia and New Zealand. Pretty rough, big swell coming up. And yeah, by the time I got back on that dock, I had never experienced land sickness. And
yeah,
just walking down a skinny dock, and I went right off the side. happens. It happens. You know.
To you. Yeah. I've never had that.
You move on. You move on.
I don't have that excuse when I fall in something. It's like, well, just clumsy.
Yeah,
you
know, right.
Well, what did you just get done doing?
So
3 a.m. yesterday. I didn't realize it was that fresh.
Yeah, I know.
You just messaged me. I'm like, dude, yeah, you're in town. Let's make it happen. And you had just gotten off.
Yeah. Essentially, I wanted to hit you up because I was like, well, maybe I'm only here for a couple of days, and it's always good to share some experience. But like we were talking about the other day on the phone, you know, I had listened to that bonus episode with you and Kurt.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of talk about people sharing their experiences and sharing these adventures and all that sort of stuff. And this podcast has been, you know, out of this world for that. I mean, you can discover so many different things.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I've always...
Yours too, by the way. Nice shirt.
Oh, thank you.
That's legit. Well, it looks like you got that at like a gift shop, man.
Getting
that's like
some merch,
nice,
man. Yeah,
I like that.
And the logo was actually made up by one of my listeners.
No kidding.
Because
that's the new, I know the art was previous. I remember seeing that in the podcast app.
Yeah,
okay, I'm
Oh
man, that looks good.
I just took it and made it the logo for everything.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love it. It looks great. And that's a listener too.
Yeah, I know. It was super awesome. And he was having to play with an AI program, and he was like, dude, this came out and it was really cool.
Yeah, it's really awesome.
He's like,
looks
take
good.
It. Yeah.
It looks really legit on the shirt.
Oh, thank
you.
I'll
have to, because I think it's on the back too. I'll have to take a
look
at the back.
Yeah, yeah.
But, so, all right. So sharing, and we were talking about that on the reflection, because Kurt and Travis built the foundation of the show and hit 1,000 episodes recently. And I just wanted to talk to him.
Yeah,
like,
hats
you know,
off.
What is it? Taught you, because they did the first 400,
right?
And he was talking about sharing the knowledge, and I feel like that's how you get more people doing this stuff. Obviously there's a lot of personalities that might not ever get to that point or ever want to, but you know, if you got the inkling to teach,
yeah,
it's almost like your duty to share it with the next generation. And it sounds like you're doing that.
That's
now?
Yeah. Well, and it's something that I had thought about when I went from doing like the Appalachian Trail to then the trip around the world and all this, and I was like, man, I just want to be like a quote unquote adventurer. I want to make it. That's my thing.
Right.
I was pretty realistic about the fact that you can't do that for your whole life. One, some of the stuff that I do is pretty dangerous, and you got to cash out before the casino takes you, so to speak. But at the same time, you think about that transition where you go from doing the adventures to then kind of inspiring, but also teaching the next generation of people sort of how to go out and do their own adventures. And I never really knew what it was going to be like. And, you know, previously when I first started sailing, that was sort of my thing, was that I was a sailing instructor, you know, small boats and Hobie Cats down the Caribbean, all that sort of stuff. Super fun. And I really enjoyed sharing my knowledge of sailing and everything like that. But this last trip, and this came about essentially, people reached out that had purchased a boat and they had a pretty bad initial experience, which, you know, I think with the rise of all the YouTube sailing content, that all makes things, I don't know, you know, those are edited videos and they show some stuff, and they can paint a bit of a rosy picture of life aboard and life at sea and sort of the romantic ideals.
Yeah.
And the reality is that, you know, you can find yourself in a pretty scary situation, even, you know, 10 miles off the coast.
Oh,
I mean, living down here in Florida, you guys can have squalls and lightning. It could start out a beautiful sunny day.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh.
Scares me half to death.
Yeah, right.
You know, every time I look out at the little marina, and there's a little bay that just boats are anchored. Every month or two, one sinks. And I'm like, what happened? Like, people, I saw people
neglect.
But I see people out on it and like maybe out on the patio or whatever you call it, the deck, enjoying a meal or just hanging out. Like 3 days later, that boat is sunk.
Right.
You can see it because the top's sticking out of the water. Yeah. And I'm like, what happened? Like, that scares me half to death thinking like that can just happen. And it just seems to happen a lot. And so anyway, that's just sitting there.
Much less going offshore. Right?
10 miles, yeah. 20 miles, way more. Like, you've done thousands of miles. It's intimidating. But it is very much romanticized because we've had some of those sailing shows on this show and talk about it. And I feel like even the videos where they're trying to say, all right, here's the reality of sailing, even then it's really diving into the depths of it.
Yeah, I mean, and unfortunately, I mean, the actual reality is that it would be, if you try to show what it was really like, it'd just be the most boring thing in the world. You know, the vast majority of the time on a sailboat, you're just sitting there. You might be reading a book, but
it's like the military.
The waves are going by, and hours and days just pass, that sort of thing.
and then just absolute chaos.
And then, yeah, I mean, it's been described as, you know, 90% boredom followed by 10% like fear and, you know, near death experiences.
Jeez.
And you know, there's some truth to that for sure. But, you know, with this couple, essentially, you know, they purchased this beautiful West Sail. And, you know, through my exploits and adventures on a West Sail, for some reason, people are like, that guy knows what he's talking about. And
yeah.
I've always said that I'm not an expert. I just have a good amount of experience and I'm willing to share it with people. And so they had reached out initially because they needed to take this boat from where they purchased it in Pensacola, Florida, around Florida to Fort Pierce.
Yeah,
which is a pretty hefty, you know, you're looking at 10 days and
I
mean, a little bit of offshore, a lot of coastal cruising and stuff. But in any event, I wasn't available, and not that I would have been able to change much to happen. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. They get a guy, and he goes, long story short, the weather turns on them when they're making sort of the offshore hop from Pensacola to, like, I don't know, towards the Keys. And this guy,
would you hug the coast or would you cut across the
that
coast?
One you have to cut across. It gets really shallow up in the, I guess, the armpit region of the Gulf up there, the big bend.
Yeah, armpit too.
Yeah, sorry, I apologize. I don't want to disparage the great state of Florida. I love it here.
Well, like, how shallow are we talking?
Oh, real shallow up there. Even the power boats that are doing the Great Loop, you know, mm-hmm. the East mm-hmm. Coast, Mississippi, all that, that's the one section where they have to go offshore.
Wow.
So it's, you know, pretty shallow up there. And, you know, you wait for a good weather window, but you never know, the Gulf, and it can change on you quickly. And that's what happened. And they saw some pretty ugly weather, probably near gale sort of experience, where the waves probably kicked up in the 10-foot range, which can be pretty spooky if you're not used to it. The problem was the captain they hired on was seasick and completely useless and down below in the bunk. And so these two fresh, never sailed before kind of people, I mean, they had sailed little Hobie Cats and stuff like that, but they had never been on the ocean. We're now trying to fight their way through this ugly weather that went on for like a day and a half. They were really smart. They made the right moves. They contacted the Coast Guard just to update them on what was going on. They did like hourly check-ins, and you know, they make it through and they're able to motor most of the way back, and they get the boat there. And you know, when you go through those experiences, and it can be in any sort of venue, it could be rock climbing, it could be mountaineering, hiking, anything. If that's the initial start, sometimes that's enough to be like, you know what?
Oh, yeah.
Let's get rid of this. I think we made the wrong decision. And luckily, they didn't go with that gut instinct. And about 9 months ago, I was able to go out and hop on board with them for about a week. And we started from scratch, you know, boat maneuvering in a marina, how not to have to call the insurance company, not have to bounce off any boats, all that sort of stuff. And that was supposed to be it. And got them to the point where they could take it out the inlet, set the sails, put a reef in the main, which means to depower when the winds pick up, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Get them competent and comfortable so that they can start learning on their own.
Yeah.
And then I guess it was back in September, October, and they just wanted a little bit more. They definitely did really well, but they wanted, we were thinking, let's do like a trip, like a 3-4 day trip over to the Bahamas and back. Because the Gulf Stream.
Was this their idea?
Yeah, this was their idea. They just wanted a little extra.
So they're getting like some confidence.
Yeah, they've got the confidence, but they also, you know, when you're sailing on the east coast of Florida, the Gulf Stream is a pretty intimidating thing. So it's it's ripping up the coast, and
it's basically a river in the ocean.
Oh yeah,
going what, 7-8?
Usually between 2 and like 4 knots.
Oh, really?
But you get a 20-knot northerly breeze counter to the Gulf Stream, and the waves can just turn. They call them square waves because they have a flat face that's just breaking and dangerous. A lot like what I ran into in my little disaster voyage
off the coast of, was it South Carolina?
I was out 400 miles from Bermuda.
Oh,
I was in the vast, you know, reaches of the Gulf Stream was still out there, though. You know, it goes all the way across the Atlantic.
Yep.
But long story short, they, you know, so we tried to do something in December, but this year, and you know, I mean, I believe it's El Nino has been pushing the jet stream up in our atmosphere south, which is why you guys just keep getting pummeled.
Mm-hmm.
This whole winter, it's been cold and rainy and all that down here in Florida.
Very wet.
So I came down and we tried to go out, but we just couldn't get a weather window because, you know, obviously I don't want to take them and put them into another gale and be like, yeah, this is pretty much what it's always going to be like when you go sailing. I don't want to traumatize them. So I'm kind of walking a little bit of a line. And so we did a few days of sailing, but we never made we never reached our goal of going across. We didn't have a big enough
window. What are you looking for? Clear days, sunny days?
Essentially looking for a gap in between the low pressure systems or the gales that's big enough for us to get over to the Bahamas and, you know, not have to fight it out on anchor, but actually enjoy a couple days there, do some more sailing, and then sail back. So we're looking for like a 5-day gap.
Yeah.
Ideally, we're looking for like a 7-day. So there's a nice buffer on either side.
Yeah.
But we don't get that. And so we're a little discouraged. But again, you know, we just call it. And then we sort of just kept our eye on the weather. And finally, this opportunity sort of came up and we had this little gap. And we're looking at the weather, and I drive down, and I'm sort of committed in this because I like these people. They're super nice, and you know they're adventurers from the Western states. They were rock climbers, like he's done El Cap, all that sort of stuff, river rafting, and you know they just at some point in their life they sort of took a, they were like, hey, let's try something new, let's do the boat thing, and. So I come down and it looks like we have our window. This big storm had just passed because we left. We were out there for 7 days. So this was like a week ago. And there was a pretty ugly storm that sat off the coast and it built up the seas. So we had to wait a couple of days because the waves will stick around for a while.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. They were out there. These seas were coming from the east, so they were head seas. We're heading into them.
Yeah.
And you're up and over them, and you're pounding through these. And they're old, and they're, you know, a little more rounded, but they slow your progress. And we kind of set off, and it looked like it was going to be, you know, 20 knots of wind, which is a decent amount. It's enough that the waves are white capping. You're powered up. You're going fast, and you're having to reef the sails and do the stuff that they really need to learn and become comfortable with.
Yeah.
But our plan was to go around the little Bahama bank, which is a trip of about 500 miles or so. So you go across the Gulf Stream, and you've got the Grand Bahamas and you got the Abaco Islands. Mm-hmm. And you're exposed on the northern part because it's the North Atlantic, and then you cut down and you get inside of the island chain. And it looked like, okay, it'll be windy, but it's not going to be crazy or anything like that. And Mother Nature has a great way of, you know, not really caring about your plans and your assumptions.
Oh, man.
So we get out, and the first day, it's all right, but there's no wind, and the forecast is just kind of wrong from what it was telling us. And then the winds pick up, but they pick up not from the south like the forecast said, but from the southeast, kind of where we want to go, because we don't want to get blown north away from the islands. We want to kind of stay closer to the shore so we get a little protection.
Yeah.
Well, by the second day, it's blowing like 20 to 25 knots and hard on the nose. And so we're, you know, in the teeth of it, and we're just hobby horsing. Because the old West sails, they have a very sort of, with sailboats, there's a term called sea kindliness. And more modern boats have a sharper bow or front that can kind of cut through wave chop. Mm-hmm. The older boats, like a West sail, have a big rounded bow. And those, they're great for really heavy weather. If you're in a storm and you're running with it, you know, you can just surf waves and you don't have to worry about, you know, flipping end over end or anything. More modern boats would get a little squirrely and out of control. Regardless, when you're beating into the waves and wind on a West sail, the boat just, the bow hits and it bounces up and then it bounces down. And you only move forward at about 1 or 2 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're kind of like stuck, and you're seeing that, you know, you're not going in the direction you want to go really. And you're slowly kind of getting pushed away from the island. And we're looking at the forecast, and we got like 4 days of it ahead of us. And it was amazing that just kind of watching, you know, this couple and see their reaction to it. And they're looking at me, obviously, and they're like, are we okay? And, you know, I'm obviously trying to exude confidence. And
yeah, are they going to hear this, I think?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No, they're absolutely, when we get to a little further down the line, it makes sense. But, I mean, trying to picture the discomfort of this situation. So 24 hours a day for essentially four days.
What's the weather outside like? I mean, the wind.
Well, the wind is heavy. The seas, because we're going into it, are spraying over the boat. So it's wet.
Is it cloudy?
No, it's sunny. It's nice. The wet and the temperature's not bad. So we got that going for us. But just to give you an idea how much motion up and down we're doing. So they were tracking our track on an app called Gaia. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. So Gaia gives you, you know, your line of where you go, but it also gives you your elevation change. By the end of it, our elevation change was 3,600 feet up and down. Okay.
Over the waves,
yeah.
Oh my, and this is, you know, how, I mean, in one wave, what's the change?
One wave, so these
like
waves
where
were,
you are sitting or standing, what's like, I was just that many feet up.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that help make this show possible.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode.
The waves that we saw were mostly wind chop, so they weren't like giant swell or anything, but I would say 6 to 9 feet for a vast majority of what we were doing, and more towards the six. The 9-footers were pretty rare, but that's enough to, you know, so you go up six and then you go down six, and so you're doing it
total or a six net zero or net six.
And it doesn't end. Like, there's no relief.
It doesn't end at all. And it's going on in, like, maybe an eight-second period, which means every 8 seconds you're going up and down. So,
oh my Lord.
One of the things that I always talk about in, like, my presentations and stuff is that one of the really nice parts about going through an experience like that is when it is over, it amplifies how great it feels to get to sort of that sunny, calm day at the end. Mm-hmm. You know, you go through the adversity and you stick to it and you don't give up and you just keep going. And the longer it lasts, almost the better. Because when you do get to the other side, it, again, it amplifies it way more. And you have this emotional roller coaster of like, oh, this is the worst. And then you find like the highest high. And I'm kind of thinking, holy
cow. The sea is bluer. The sky is bluer. Everything's more beautiful. You enjoy that coffee more. Everything's just great.
You have this elation where you're just like, this is amazing. And I've always had it, and I've experienced it a million times out there.
Right.
But I'm starting to sort of think like, holy cow, maybe that's just me. I wonder what's going to happen. Because I knew the wind was going to shift. Mm-hmm. And because there was a low pressure system that was moving away, and been through enough of them to know how it clocks around and all that sort of stuff. And we're waiting for the shift, and we're waiting for the shift, and it finally comes.
And what are you doing during this? How many days? 3 days?
4 days of that what we would call rough weather.
Is there like maintenance going on during? Are you just kind of keeping it out? Like what's the work you're doing all day?
Well, the constant sort of thing. So there's three of us on the boat. So what you would do is 3 hours, you're on watch. So you're up in the cockpit, keeping an eye on things, sailing the boat. And then the other two can be down below sleeping, cooking, whatever. You do like your daily checks. You're looking at everything to make sure nothing's working itself loose. Because with that much motion and pounding, obviously stuff, screws and pins and things start get wear and tear. But for the most part, in those situations, you try and sleep, which is difficult, but you get so tired from the motion and like gripping on to everything.
Oh,
and
imagine,
we call that sea weariness, where you're just like, I'm exhausted, but I've just been sitting here, but I'm gripping on to this winch.
Balancing. Right? Yeah.
Like, I'm physically sore. My muscles hurt.
That's crazy. Yeah. I didn't even think about that, but yeah. I mean, you get that even kayaking or anything on water where you're just, it's all these little micro flexes.
Yeah,
wear you down.
It's a great core workout.
Oh yeah, totally. You look great. You look like you're in good shape.
I'm trying.
All right, so that's one thing. All right, 3 hours of watch. The other two are sleeping or cooking, which cooking has to be equally a challenge.
It limits your ability to, you know, it's eaten. Luckily, they provisioned this boat like champions. I mean, and they over-provisioned it, if you will. But there was just tons of stuff. So it's a lot of like cold cuts and cheese and boiled eggs. But all that stuff's pre-made, so you can just grab and go, and crackers, all that sort of stuff. And you know, they admittedly were pretty seasick, but they kept their attitude sort of.
Your remedy for that? What's like something you do or tell people to do? I know there's like medication. There's like a patch you can wear.
There's patches. There's what little pressure the point things. So what I always do, and I do it with people as well. We almost do it as a tradition. Is you take a Dramamine about an hour before you depart. And that does two things. One, it gives you sort of the best head start against seasickness. But two, it also makes you drowsy. And because you just start the watch system, you know, immediately when you get out there, two people, if they can, want to be able to go down and go to sleep. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because trying to catch sleep when you can is very important, because sometimes when the weather gets really bad, it's hard to sleep at all. And then you might find 24 hours go by, and then, you know, you start making poor decisions, all that sort of stuff. So you take the Dramamine, and that seems to work pretty well. If it doesn't, and you're still getting seasick, that one's tough. You know, ginger is supposed to be a good remedy. I've heard taking a shot of sherry, which I don't even know what sherry really is. Is it a wine?
I don't know either.
I think it's some sort of drink. I've heard of that. You know, there's
like, well, I don't have any.
Yeah, right. I couldn't imagine wanting to drink anything when I'm seasick, but.
That's true.
One of the things, though, I always tell people is, you know, if you feel like it's going to happen, just let it happen. Throw up over the side. You're going to feel better. But what you need to do instantly is go and eat some crackers and drink some water. And chances are you're going to throw that up as well. But then you're going to go back and you're going to eat more crackers and you're going to drink more water. Because the if you have that empty stomach, then it becomes a real problem and you can turn into like dry heaves. And then it just kind of can snowball to the point where you just down in the bunk and
useless.
Yeah, until the weather sort of clears up.
That could be days.
Yeah. And I've been on, there was one, actually, I think it was my first Atlantic crossing, and there was a young lady on that boat who was seasick for 13 days, I think, on the way to the Azores from Antigua. And by the time, and she was small already, but she had lost so much weight that her eyes were like sunk in her head a little bit. And it was worrisome. She was going to almost fly from the Azores to our destination, which I think was Mallorca or something like that. Mm-hmm. And luckily the forecast was for flat seas after that, but you know, there was just nothing she could do, you know. And it incapacitates you to the point of like something like vertigo, where you can't even really stand up. So it's so miserable. Yeah, so it's a worry. And I will say, on the side note, anybody, and I know quite a few sailors that get seasick and then continue to go sailing. Mm-hmm. And hats off. I wouldn't do that.
Really?
No way.
I mean, you're talking about in the moment.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Get up and go.
Yeah, I do. Ugh. And people do it. And I think you are so impressive because I know how bad that feels. I used to get seasick when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And I still, you know, that was 40 years ago and I can remember how bad it was. No, I
don't envy that. So does it get better the longer the trip is, or does it get worse?
Typically, if you continue to eat and you stay hydrated, eventually your body's going to get used to it and the motion and all that sort of stuff, and you'll snap out of it. And it's very similar to when, you know, there's typically a moment where like your hangover disappears.
Yeah.
And it's like in a flash, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, finally, I feel great again.
Yeah.
You see that out at sea, or the waves just calm down enough and then all of a sudden you're good to go again. But, you know, so our situation was getting a little rough, and it keeps dawning on me in my head, like, you know, I'm the one who was like, all right, well, this is our game plan. We'll go around this and all that. And feeling a bit responsible for what's going on, even though it's Mother Nature, you know.
And what else could you have done?
Nothing really. It was mostly just you kind of go through the experience. And again, we're in sort of teaching and learning mode. So on the bright side, I'm like, this is a great experience because – they're going to see what you do. And the guy, I'm out there and he's reefing and she's on the main sheet. So these are things where you're walking around the boat and you're having to mess with the sails. The boat's pitching up and down, all that stuff. And they had to do it enough where we got like 6 months worth of training in to 4 days.
Wow.
I mean, his hands were all chaffed and it was great. It was great. So there was like these positives, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, holy cow, what have I gotten these people into? And my concern was that when we do reach the end of that and we get to the good stuff, the nice calm seas, the sunny day and the nice breeze, are they going to react to it the same way as I do, where I'm like, holy cow, that was so worth it because this feels amazing.
Yeah.
And this whole time too, I had to keep kind of projecting myself back to what it was like when I first started doing, you know, solo sailing. And I remembered, I hadn't thought about it in years, but when I did my trip from the BVI to Gloucester, Massachusetts, first big passage through pretty dangerous waters alone. And I got up past the Gulf Stream and I got in some pretty ugly weather up there. And I can remember how scared I was. I was just like, oh. And it's just me on the boat. So it's maybe a different sort of level of fear, I guess. And there's nobody to kind of look at and be like, we're going to be all right. Right. But
it was,
I was
more experienced.
Yeah. And I just wanted to make sure that I was kind of keeping my head in the game and realizing, you know, what their fear level might be. And I guess that was why I was trying to stay as positive as possible and all that sort of stuff. And it worked, because when the winds finally changed and we were able to start heading where we wanted to head, because for those 4 days too, the thing was, we were slowly getting pushed away from the island.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So there's that concern as well of like, how long is this going to last? Are we going to have to, Are we even gonna be able to get back? You know,
what's the danger is that you're just so far out. It would just take longer to get back.
It'd take a while to get back. And in those moments where you're like counting the minutes, just being like, how long is this gonna go on? The further you get away from land, the more that fear sort of upticks.
Yeah.
And even for me in there, I was like, gosh, almighty, holy cow.
Because it's almost, can you just sense like the open sea?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but totally.
Beside you, like, oh my gosh, the Atlantic is out there. Uh-huh. We're just slowly getting pulled in there or pushed out there.
And in the, you know, in the Atlantic in the wintertime, you know, in February, the further north you go, the more dangerous, the windier, the colder. Right. So it's sort of like we're getting swept away from the happy little island into the belly of the beast.
Yeah.
And so these fears are sort of, you know, culminating and stuff. But luckily, like Mother Nature does so many times, right at the right moment where it's pushed you right to the edge, it decides, okay, they've had enough. And I will say the boat is probably one of the best West Sail 32s on the planet. The person who owned it previously employed people at Pacific Sea Craft, which is a really high-end sort of sailboat manufacturer and all that sort of stuff, to rebuild this from the hull up. And it was built originally in 79, but it was recommissioned as a brand new boat in like 2010 or something.
Oh, wow.
So it's up there. It's got to be in the top five for sure. So
really?
It's super well-found.
I mean, that's
yeah. It wow. makes Sparrow seem like an old grandpa out there, right?
Which, yeah, it's probably right.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, right. So we get there, you know, so the boat does really well. And I do have like full confidence in that and everything. And I'm just trying to share the experience with them and show them, you know, this is part of the adventure and all that sort of stuff. But when the winds finally do change, and with the low pressure system, it's kind of interesting because the center of it passes in the front and it brings with it a switch in the wind, but lots of these squalls, these big, heavy rains. But because now all of a sudden we're headed in the right direction and we're headed back towards the island where we want to go, and the seas are starting to calm down, and actually sometimes it can rain so hard that it almost dampens down the waves. Hmm. And I'm looking up. I went off watch, and I'm down there trying to just sleep a little because obviously I was kind of doing double duty to make sure everything was good and all that sort of stuff, because, you know, the fear factor. But I get up and I look and I see on the little chart plotter, and I'm like, you know, straining my eyes, and I see that we're headed in the right direction. And I look up the companionway, and the wife, I don't want to name any of their names, but she's up there, and she's got her foul weather gear on, and she's standing in the rain, just pelting, like her hair's like blowing up. She's the biggest smile on her face, and I just see it, and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's happened. We've broken through the bad, and now wow. we're into this good zone. And it's still, you know, if you think about it, yeah, it's squally and rainy, but the fact that the hard part was over and the good feelings and like the positivity had come back was so overwhelming for them. And as that day sort of went from the squalls and everything to a steadier wind, and the waves just got cut right out, like the opposing wind just chopped the top right off of them. And throughout that night, the seas became like flat, and then the wind stayed, and we were able to, it felt like essentially going from being on a trampoline to being on railroad tracks. We were just flat. And I'm watching and listening to the joy that they are feeling. And it lifted my heart up. And I was like, holy cow, like they've been able to luckily sort of experience this transformation from just gritting through it, and you've got the fear and the unknown and all this stuff, to then all of a sudden finding that spot that made going through that all so well worth it. And they understood that. They understood it. We talked about it for hours. For the rest of the trip, we were going on and on about the emotional roller coaster, and you know, the commitment when you're out there is 100%, because you can't like pause the ocean and walk away. You can't climb down the cliff face. You know, you're out there, you have to sail your boat back. And there's nothing you do about it. And so, you know, you kind of feel locked out there. But then as soon as everything changed, oh, man, it was just such an amazing feeling to see that these people had the same emotions that I did all those years ago when I went through a lot of that sort of stuff. And I still went through those same emotions out there on this trip because they, you know, as confident as I might have been trying to portray things, I'm still like, holy cow, you know, I hope this storm isn't going to get much worse. And I told them that. They
kind
knew.
Kind of on the edge here.
Yeah, I was, well, because, you know, I'm used to being on Mighty Sparrow. Mighty Sparrow is basically outfitted for world, you know, high latitude, Southern Ocean. And this boat is not quite at that level as far as the, you know, heavy duty sails and super small storm stuff and all that. We were pretty close, but not quite Sparrow level. And Sparrow just gives me a level of confidence that I just, you know, if it's blowing 50 knots, when the tropical storm went over us in 2022 or 2021, I knew we'd make it through. I wasn't really worried about it. But, you know, different boat. There were concerns, let's say, underlying, you know. I told him it was kind of like a duck on the pond, you know. On the surface, I looked totally calm and placid. Underneath, those feet are moving. And that was my brain. Long story short, sorry, because I keep kind of going off.
No, this is great.
It was sort of one of those things where I got to watch what happened. I got to watch the transition. And you know, when I look back on it, we weren't ever really in any serious danger or anything like that.
Yeah.
We were definitely doing the right things. They learned a huge amount in a very short amount of time. But it was that as the last couple of days, you know, we sailed through and then we sailed back to Florida. I was just thinking to myself, like, holy cow, this is the transition. This is where you go from, you know, being the adventurer who does these things and he experiences or she experiences them and then brings back that sort of knowledge and shares it with people to I'm out there with people and I'm showing them exactly what it's like as you go through it. And they get to experience it with a little bit of sort of confidence knowing there's somebody there, you know, to make sure they don't steer into the wrong direction or anything like that, so to speak. And I don't know, it's just like, holy cow,
this was new for you.
And this is new. Yeah. I started doing some of these like delivery trips first, and then this was very unique where it was people looking for the experience to essentially fast track the learning curve and hopefully avoid really, really bad trouble out on the sea, you know, because it's easy to think, oh yeah, this should be an easy trip, and then you get out there and it's not, and you don't know what to do, and you make mistakes, and again, it snowballs, and unfortunately, on a boat, you know, that snowball turns into an avalanche, and then the boat sinks, which is not a good thing. And I don't want to discourage you because know you were telling me that you're going to do some sailing lessons.
Yeah, soon, but there's a definitely a fear of the ocean. Not being able to make all those decisions quickly enough,
right,
and have all that experience before it gets traumatic,
before it gets out of control. Yeah.
Whereas, like, can I meet all the? I don't know. I don't know if I trust my patience or my ability to learn even that quickly to get to the point. You know what I mean? So sailing seems like one of those things that's. There's so much knowledge that goes into it, so much experience that you need to have first, almost like flying, where it's like you don't just go out and it's like driving go drive a go-kart and you can just kind of figure stuff out. Go fly. It's a totally different.
The consequences are very high
all the time. Sailing feels like that to me.
Okay. Well, when do you have like a time frame of when you're going to go out and do some of this?
A couple weeks.
Oh, a couple weeks?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, boy. I hope I'm not scaring
you out of doing it. I think we're going to be like in a bay, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean,
it's going to be pretty chill. But just, you know, there's so much that it's such a big thing too. The boat is so big.
I'm
so used to, you know, a little kayak or a little bike or
a little
walking like backpacking like you were on the AT.
Well, and that's self-propelled. Now you have to use an invisible force.
Yeah, it's like it's almost like a horse, you know, it has a mind of its own in a way. And you know what I mean? You've got to learn horse. And there's a lot to know. There's a lot to know. So, all right. So sharing it, what do you feel like? I mean, one, it brought back some of those feelings for you.
of first experiencing some of these things they were experiencing.
Yeah.
Two, you got to see it firsthand, the reaction, joy.
It was like watching a baby being born
or
something.
Yeah, wow, yeah.
It was so cool.
Man, that's awesome. So, I mean, what do you think is different about you now? You said it's almost like a pre-Jerome
thing
now that's, I'm looking at it, I'm looking at adventure differently now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, one of the things was, you know, how can I make that transition from the guy who's out there doing the adventures to, I don't know, helping people or guiding people in the right direction so that they can go and do these things, mm-hmm. and not just share what it's like, but actually take them all, like guide them out there, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I'd always sort of wondered what it would be like and what sort of shape it would form. Because like I said, I was real realistic. I knew that, you know, I wasn't going to do crazy adventures my whole life. It was going to have to taper off. And I'm not done yet by any means. I mean, I've got trips sort of that I'm cooking up for this next winter, but it's, I don't know. It gave me a glimpse of like the future, maybe like 5-10 years down the line. You know, you think you have to retire and hang up your adventure coat, but I don't think you really do. You can tone them back a little bit, but you're bringing other people along with you.
Oh yeah.
To sort of really share that experience. And it was just, I don't know. It was an amazing feeling of, I don't know. It was like comfort. It was sort of like, holy cow. It's not like I'm going to just have to bow out of this game. I'll be able to actually keep going and do it in almost a more productive way, if that's the right word.
Yeah,
you know,
totally meaningful, maybe.
Yeah, meaningful way. Yeah, and
purposeful.
You can sort of see the fruits of your labor and stuff. Like it was funny because, you know, we finished this trip up, and they're on cloud 9, and I am too. We pull in to Fort Pierce at like 3:30 in the morning. And then we proceed to sit in the cockpit and have tequila until like 4 because we're so stoked on life. We're just like, we did it. The last bunch of days were great. Can you, like, laughing about all the misery that we're all going through together for those 4 days and how awful this was and that. But it was great. It was just a great feeling. And there was just awesome energy. And at the end, you know, as I'm taking off, and we did a short podcast together, sort of like a debrief sort of thing. And, you know, they were like, so next year, let's go bigger. We want to sail from Fort Pierce to Bermuda, Bermuda to the Caribbean, to the BVI, which is, we did on this trip, we did 600 miles with one stop where we just anchored for the night.
Yeah.
That is 1,000 miles to Bermuda, 1,000 miles to the BVI. So that's like, you know, 14-day trip on a west sail, but through some, we'll definitely see some heavy weather, like some real big swell, all that sort of stuff.
Wow.
And they were like, where do we sign up? Let's do this. And I said, you know, I pumped the brakes. I was like, listen, I'll do that with you, but you have to utilize the experience gained on this trip. And I want to see photos of you guys over in the Bahamas doing your own adventures. And I think I said, you guys have to log 1,000 miles of your own adventures and then we'll do it.
Wow.
Which I was kind of like, oh, that's kind of cool. It was like, I almost have like
my
own
little training plan.
Yeah.
Like a and coach.
We were talking about, oh, it's like sailing into oblivion school of seamanship, unaccredited by anybody except for the people who go and the students. So they're the inaugural class and they've graduated. Gosh. And I don't know. It's just been a lot of fun. And just seeing that transition, it was, my heart is like thumping a little bit just thinking about it. Because it is
I can't
so
get
fresh.
Over how fresh.
Yeah,
I mean, this is, we're not talking about 3 months ago.
No,
like a couple
we're talking
days
yesterday.
Ago, right?
Yeah.
2 days ago. So you're still processing this. You're still like, as you're driving back or making your way across the state, you're like, your mind's turning. Like, what does this mean? What am I doing now?
Yeah.
Well, so what? I mean, if you could, I don't know, imagine what this will be in a few years.
Oh, doing
this
going forward with that.
Yeah. What do you think this means for you? And, you know, and I do want to say, like, you does not mean not doing adventures anymore. I know so right. many adventures. That's almost how they keep their edge. They keep their their skills sharp.
Yeah.
And almost practice things and get their own fulfillment is going out and doing their own yearly adventure or monthly adventure even or whatever it is. And then they have almost this reserve time for sharing that information with others, which might be these trips you do. What could you imagine this being for you moving forward?
I think further down the line, it for me, you know, one of the nice parts of it actually being on a sailboat is one of the very few things where if you're teaching it, you're actually doing the activity. So if I, you know, unlike when you do like skiing instruction, you might be on the mountain, but you're not really skiing the way you want to.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're out there on the sailboat, you're actually sailing the boat and you're in the element that you want to be in. You just happen to be sort of showing these people.
You're just almost speaking as you're doing it.
Yeah.
You're doing it anyway.
Yeah, so you're kind of where you want to be.
It. Yeah. Yeah. That's cool.
I think for me, it just, it's one of those things where it kind of gives me a little bit of, I don't know, it's hard to describe what word would be really appropriate here, but it's almost like a little bit of validation in some ways that it was worth it. What I went through doing all these trips and all this, you know, all these different solo sailing trips and learning about the ocean and the weather and a boat and how to deal with certain things was worth it because now I can pass it on. It's not just some memory that I have.
Yeah.
So that when I'm 80 years old sitting on a porch watching squirrels, I'm sort of like,
you forget.
Yeah, like, I know. I'm reading through my journal and my logbook and be like, dang, this guy was cool. That's all well and good. But I think that being able to pass it on to people to the next generation is so valuable because, I mean, I only got to go sailing anyway and do the solo stuff because I'm standing on the stories of the sailors that came before me. Without their inspiration, I wouldn't have gone.
Well, didn't you say this whole idea started with finding books on a bookshelf?
Yeah. On every single boat, there were like two or three books that were always there. And it was Bernard Mautissier. He was the legendary French solo sailor back in the 60s. Sir Robin Knox Johnson, first guy to go around the world nonstop. And, you know, there were a few others. I mean, the other ones were, it was always funny because people would be like, well, what inspired you? And in the beginning, I always said, well, Godforsaken Sea, that book was awesome. Voyage for Madmen. And they have these great titles, you know, and I suppose you could even put mine in there, Sailing into Oblivion. It's like, oh, that doesn't sound pleasant.
Yeah, definitely.
But, I don't know.
So people sharing their knowledge and stories is what got you in it.
Got me into it.
So, almost you have to.
Yeah, and it just – and I share the story a lot in the presentations that I do and all that, and that is fun. That's always been really, really enjoyable, not only to share my experiences, but afterwards to sit and talk with all these other sailors or just people who have done – one of my favorite venues is always going to assisted living communities because, you know, most people are in their 70s or 80s or 90s. Or this one young lady was 102. She sat through one of my presentations a couple of years ago and then proceeded to grill me over the charts for about 45 minutes asking about all the places and all the stuff. And, I mean, sharp as a tack at 102.
Wow.
I was like, whoa.
Wow.
But they're just a great audience, and they – I think that generation definitely understands. There's nobody ever asks me why I would do that.
Really?
When I go to a place like that, which I've always thought, I'm like, yeah, because they get it.
Interesting.
And I don't know why they get it. Maybe it's, you know, the world back in the, because they would have been my age back in, what, the 50s or.
Yeah. You know, or maybe they have a perspective where it's like, yeah, that's a cool way to spend your time.
I didn't think about it like that, but because you do. I would think that the older we get, the more it's like, man, I should have.
You know, you might get someone in their 50s or 60s even who are like, well, what are you doing to save money? What are you doing for retirement? What are you doing for this or that?
You get to your
80s. Maybe at 80s, 90s, 100, you're like, man, why did I waste my time spending, you know, thinking about all that stuff? When really, you know, I'm in this assistant living facility. Kids don't see me. Like, I don't know. You might just think back and say, I would have done it different.
Right.
And they see
someone
like you, and I'm obviously I've never
been in that position, so I don't know, but that's cool. So how do you call those places and say, hey, I've got this cool story. Do y'all have time slots for people to come in?
Oh, for those, yeah, it's, I don't know. I've definitely done quite a bit of like cold calling and stuff like that. Mostly it's word of mouth. Obviously 2020 through 2023 was pretty bad for public speaking, as you can right. imagine. So I was very close to hanging up my hat on that one just because it just didn't seem like it was going to come back. But 2024 has been just a bombshell. I really? Had to actually get like a schedule thing to be able to keep track. I mean, within the next like 3 weeks, I think I've got like eight or nine, and then I get to go down. This is like unbelievable, but I get to go down to the British Virgin Islands in March as the resident adventurer at the Bitter End. And I'm going to do presentations like 4 nights a week and tell the stories. And basically, you know, when I picture someone in that position, I picture, you know, some African safari hunter who sits in the bar and you buy him a drink and then he regales you with hunting stories, you know, or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that is kind of you. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So I don't know. It's kind of cool. So if anybody's in the BVI, and I think that's going to be, when is it? 17th through like April 1st or something.
Dude, that's coming up. That's yeah. awesome.
Come on out to Bitter End.
Well, you've got a unique skill set because you've got the experience, but you can also share it in a really interesting way.
And I attribute
good
that.
Good voice.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, you've good. Got a great voice too. I've heard you disparage yourself about this. It's
yeah,
not
I gotta
true.
Stop.
You gotta stop, man. It's
and
a great
you,
voice.
And you tell the story. I'll go take 3 steps forward, 2 steps back, 3 steps forward. You really tell a fluid story really well.
I try to.
I think as a presentation, it works great. A lot of humor. You portray the seriousness in the situation, but it's also entertaining. You know what I mean? It's not right, like, right. I don't know, it's not overly serious. You know, you get a lot of adventurers that basically look at me. I don't get that feeling from you. It's a whole lot of respect for Mother Nature.
Right.
I love that. And just like, I was fortunate to be out there is the feeling I get when you talk. You know what I mean?
Oh,
the vibe.
Thank you.
I like that. And so it's, you got a lot going for it. Because I get people on the show that on paper, or I'll get an email, and it's like, this sounds so cool.
Yeah.
And I have them on, right. And I'm like, so how was it? And they're like,
it's good.
It was good. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, I can tell within 30 seconds. I'm
it's
going to be tough. I'm going to do most of the talking. With you, though, I'm just like, Then what?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
so
right. Oh, well, that's cool.
What I was gonna ask, what do you think? There's so many ways to, because you got paid, like they hired you to do this, right?
Yeah. So and essentially,
there's
I mean,
like no way you could spend that amount of time.
No, for sure. And it's one of those things where I long ago I thought, oh man, it'd be so cool to have like a sailing school and set all that up. And as I got more into or closer to trying to do that, I realized, you know, how many difficulties there are because, you know, not only do you provide a boat, but then you have to have insurance and then you got to have certifications and all this sort of stuff to be legit and all that. And it's very, very difficult unless you're already established as one and all that. And it's even difficult for them to do it.
And you got weather dependent too. You might not. The sailing class, I've had to reschedule twice because there was no wind.
Right.
And I'm like,
and that happens.
You know what I mean? I took the day off work or something. And then for you, if you just have a goal, you're like, well, whatever happens. Like,
right.
Whatever's
right.
out there is what we'll deal with. And those are the lessons you'll learn.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely wouldn't ever grab, you know, I would never just sit down and be like, hey, well, it's going to happen out there anyway, so let's go.
Okay,
I'm going to make sure it stays pretty safe.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
But it is one of those things. Essentially, if I can, and I guess my target, if there was one, my target would be people who have had kind of a bad experience so far. And they're new to sailing and they're about ready to be like, nah.
Got it.
You know,
and you
those
think
are the
a lot
people,
of those.
Oh, there's tons. I know a lot of people like that. Wow. And they, you know, and they'll live on their boats in the marinas and stuff, and they'll tinker away, and they'll talk about, you know, where they want to go and stuff, and then eventually they'll sell the boat or something like that, or something will happen.
The confidence is never built to go.
Yeah.
Out,
and which, it's 100% understandable.
Yeah.
Because it is, you know, I like I said, I know quite a few people who have had a pretty bad experience for a couple of days just trying to do like one little trip, move the boat or something, and that's the last time they went out. And those are the people that I kind of want to be able to reach out to and just say, hey, let's give it one more shot and yeah, let's go out there and let me show you how tough that boat is and how you can manage it. Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, I guess as sort of a meaning behind all this and something that really became just absolutely clear on this trip, or at least reinforced itself with me, is, you know, we live in a world that kind of tries to avoid struggle, adversity. It's like, oh, that sounds hard. I don't want to have to do that. Mm-hmm. I think it's absolutely necessary part of life is having to go through struggle, because mm-hmm, that's what really brings you that joy at that next level on the backside, as long as you're able to sort of punch your way through it. And sailing out there and being on that ocean, which can beat you up for days and weeks and months on end if it has to, is like the perfect proving ground that when you go out and you make it through that struggle and overcome that adversity, you're going to find something, an emotion afterwards, that is so great you will instantly be like, let's go and get more of this. Wow. I need that again. I mean, when you finish the Appalachian Trail, when you finished riding to Florida,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, it wasn't all roses and rainbows and butterflies, was it?
No, of course not.
There were
not.
Probably a lot of sores and, you know,
a lot of rough days for
bugs
sure.
In the teeth and eyes.
Oh, yeah.
And but you get through that, and then holy smokes. And, you know, if you, I could only imagine you must have had plenty of days in a row where it's like raining or cold and awful. Mm-hmm. And then you get to a nice day and it's like, this nice day is like 10 times any nice day I've ever had.
Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that help make this show possible.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode.
I've told this before, and I'm sure it's probably different with you because you're accessing these places on boat and through that struggle. You know, I'd get to a valley or a scenic point after a really hard struggle, and the scene was just, it was magic. It was heaven.
Yeah.
You know, and then I've gone back to that same spot, but I drove there, and I was, you know, with my wife or something. I'm like, wow, it just doesn't feel as
right.
Grand.
Yeah.
You know, even magical places, it's just like, this just doesn't feel the same. Maybe it's because I've seen it for the second time, but I think it's because there wasn't that struggle. There
to
wasn't
get there.
The elements. There wasn't the time it took to get there and the joy. And it's almost like all of life, the vibrance and the brilliance gets photoshopped in real time where it's just amazing. But then when you take all that adversity out, it's just kind of muted.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's kind of one of the subjects that I guess I've been talking about in some of these presentations that I do. And it's one of those where you're trying to wrap things up and you're trying to explain and give some good takeaway value to the audience of things that you learned. But then to go out and experience it, not only personally, but watch two people that, you know, I've just met, you know, over the last bunch of months, feel and see and experience the same thing. And I was like, oh, this is like a real thing. This isn't just some quirky thing that goes on in my head. This is like, this is a real deal. Like, holy smokes. And it really, it just makes me kind of try to figure out a way to share that knowledge where it's like, no, we want this. We want this struggle because, oh, when it's over, you're gonna be amazed. And
wow.
To be able to help guide people to that point, I think is, I don't know, it gives me a lot of hope for, you know, the next 20 years of my life.
Like
that
new
I,
meaning.
Yeah, like, holy cow, okay.
It's a need. It's a need, you know, because people are doing what they're doing to try to live life more. You know, people are getting these boats not to take the easy path or not to, you know, be lazy. They're doing it because they're in search of getting more out of life. And when you get those first huge obstacles, it can really almost change that. You're helping change their trajectory. If they wouldn't have done that again, you know, they would just wouldn't have known what they're missing, basically.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? That's the saddest part. They would have never cared because they don't realize what they would have missed. I think the same thing with folks that maybe went somewhere and didn't see that one place they could have gone visit. I'm like, oh my gosh, you don't even know that was there to miss in the first place. That's sad. What can I do to help make sure they go experience that? So, you know, you're helping people.
Well, and I flip it right on to you. This podcast, I think, does that as well, because not only are people sharing their experiences, but it's also like an archive of like all the different adventures that one can go on.
Oh, gosh.
You could just, I mean, there should be an adventure sports podcast list of different adventures. I mean, it'd be huge.
There is dozens of just random things. There's big buckets, you know, bikepacking, backpacking is huge. That's like one that lots of people can get, but there's so many trails. And, you know, no one listens to this show to learn how to sail or to learn how to do something. It really is like that constant reminder that, okay, I've got to go do that thing I've been wanting to do. We hear from a lot of people out on adventures, like say you're out in the middle of the ocean going through a storm, and they'll listen to the show to just remember they're not the only idiot out there doing this. They're hey, my mom's telling me this is dumb. My friends are like, don't understand. And then I'm like, no, there's tons of people out there that think this way and do this and just feel like they're part of a larger community.
Yeah.
And also, they're not crazy. Like, they're not crazy for wanting this out of life. And so, yeah, you're basically our go-to, our correspondent in the sailing world, I guess. But so what do you think?
My pleasure.
I mean, what's like some of the thoughts right now? What do you think? Are you going to try to look for more people to help do this? How would you think you would do that?
Well,
word of mouth, of course.
Yeah. Luckily, I mean, you know, you're obviously at you know, 10 or 1,000 episodes and what, 10 million downloads, not to, you know, toot your horn here, but, I have my little tiny podcast has a pretty decent little reach now, and I get a lot of emails through that. People who are in that situation that are like, oh man, you know, this isn't going well, and I could really use. They don't even know that there's people out there that'll be able to help them.
Wow.
And I don't know. I would think going forward, it'll probably be sort of a word of mouth thing because, you know, this couple, we sat down and like I said, we did a podcast and they really laid out how they felt the whole time when we were out there and what, you know, I was able to sort of bring to the table, I suppose, and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, obviously I can't do it all the time. I'm one of those people that likes to do a bunch of different things. I can sometimes get a little bit bored if it's always the same. But yeah, I don't know. I think in between some of my own adventures and stuff, mixing it up when I can. And I must say, I love sailing on Mighty Sparrow, right?
Yeah.
But it's expensive to do it. And the last trip broke the bank when I lost all that equipment and all that sort of stuff. And I need new sails. There's a huge, huge list. But to be able to hop on somebody else's boat,
it's all there,
and they actually pay you to do it like that. That's a
pretty sweet deal.
That's a pretty sweet deal.
Did you feel like an expert before this?
No, not really. I mean, maybe in the West Sail, heavy displacement, that certain type of boat, because it's a unique sort of vessel to sail. It's very different than today's modern yachts, which are light and fast and all that. these old boats, these old classics, they're built really, really heavy to be able to handle heavy duty weather, but they sail differently and it takes a little more patience and technique, I guess. But I've always, you know, I've always said, I don't need to go fast. I'm already doing what I want to be doing. I'm on the ocean on a sailboat. Like, I don't really care if it's super slow. It's kind of nice sometimes to be able to dodge a storm or whatever. But if you're in a boat that can handle the storm, I try and heed my own words where I'm like, well, this will be worth it because when it's over, I'll feel really yeah, good. Yeah. Remember that, Jerome. Remember that. You know?
So do you feel like when you were talking with them and explaining things, did it start to hit you like, well, I actually do know a lot. I actually do have a lot of experience.
Yeah. I mean, in a certain way, for sure. I'm always really cautious, though. The sailing world has, unfortunately, kind of a bad reputation of people giving other people unsolicited advice, like, oh, you know what you need to do, and do this, do that. And it's kind of, I've never wanted to be someone who's just blatantly constantly offering up my advice. Plus, you always have to be careful because there's no one best way to do anything on a boat. Every boat's different, every wave, every situation. And I don't ever want to tell people this is the best way to do this and then have them go out and get hurt or something. So I'm very cautious to say that, you know, this has worked for me and this is what I do and let's try it and see how this works, but there might be better ways. I want to make sure people know I'm not the end all be all by any means. You know, you want that, you go sail with John Kretschmer or something like that. He's been doing that sort of stuff. He does, people have been paying him for decades to go across the Atlantic in the middle of the winter. And they want to see the heaviest of heavy weather.
I mean, people want that experience.
Oh, yeah. He's legit. He's down there at Cape Horn right now with a bunch of people.
Jeez.
This guy.
What's the thrill? I mean, it's the thrill of it, right? That people
want. Well, it's the experience because a lot of people that own boats, they want to be able to safely experience a full gale. Chaos. Just terrifying, but also beautiful. But they want to do it with somebody who's done it so many times that they really do have the full on, like, this is what we're going to do. And I've never talked to John. We've only texted a few times. But he's probably one of the greatest American captains, you know, as far as heavy weather sailing that's alive today. His book, Sailing a Serious Ocean, which details a ton of his exploits. And he's very self-deprecating. He's just like, yeah, I've wandered into like three hurricanes in my life, you know, and he goes through the story of them. And you know, he's the first one to be like, yeah, I made this mistake, but he's lived and made it through and he's never lost anybody. And people are like, dude, that guy. So
what a way to make a living.
Yeah.
You know? Like, yeah. Crazy, right? I take people through storms willingly.
Yeah. And I don't want to do that. This weather we were in, you could consider it heavy weather where we were, but not like storm survival stuff. What I want to do is give people a chance to experience a little taste of, like, holy cow. But yeah, I'm a fair weather sailor. Regardless of the trips that I've done in the past, my preferred is tropical breeze, nice gentle seas, you know, sundowner at the appropriate time in the cockpit. You're just like, oh, this is beautiful. And that's what I'm looking for. And if I can share that experience with people and at least get them, you know, 50 miles offshore so they can see that it's not the edge of the earth out there, that's what I want.
Wow.
So that's my story. I'm sticking to it.
Man, so next, when we talk again, because we will talk again, we're going to be hearing about all the people you've helped fall in love with sailing and have a good experience. So all right. You're new into this transition, sounds like.
Right.
We'll wrap up.
Yeah, no worries.
We said an hour, it's been an hour 12 already.
Yeah, I know.
You know, you might not have advice for people yet who are wanting to take their knowledge base and help the next generation or help the next generation of adventurers in that niche, but from your first experience and kind of what you saw,
What is maybe some of the things you would share with yourself pre doing this experience? Like, oh, Jerome, you should have started this earlier, or like, here's what you could have been recording differently while you were building this knowledge. Like, I don't know. What are kind of some of these?
If I could go back and be like, hey,
yeah, that might be a weird question to ask, or, you know, share, because you're not like 20 years into sharing your knowledge yet in the sense of
right, people, right.
But you're new on this path. And I think there's a lot of people out there that might have at least enough experience with what they do to start bringing others along. I do this with kayaking and paddleboarding.
Mm-hmm.
It's just weekend trips, but it opens the door to people to realize, oh, you can do this stuff.
Yeah.
And then they're off to the races on their own. But I'm not an expert. I just like, I'm enough knowledgeable enough to at least start getting people out there. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of people that maybe have more knowledge than they realize and could start getting others out there, but maybe aren't thinking that way yet.
Well, I think, again, it just, I just really did not ever want to be the person who's spouting off like, this is the best way, this is the best way. Because as I learned, you know, working on boats when I was in my early 20s, I had to deal with a lot of captains, and most captains are not very good managers. They don't have people skills, and they're not supposed to, really. A captain's job is to make sure the people aboard are safe and the boat is safe. You know, if he's going to be impolite, or he or she are going to be impolite, then it doesn't really matter. You know, you just have to chin up and take it, do your best, and you hopefully then you become the captain, and then you can do it your way. But I had to deal with a lot of people like that were just barking at me and telling me how it was done and all this sort of stuff. And I was like, man, there's a better approach to that. Man, I think maybe I took it too far where I was like, you know, I'm not going to offer up my own advice to people. Even as I started doing bigger and bigger trips and got more experience, I was always kind of, I was the one who never really wanted to chime in when everybody's, you know, standing around trying to help old Ted over here with his mm-hmm. issue on his boat. I'd just kind of sit on the sidelines being, eh. And I guess, yeah, if I was going to tap myself on the shoulder, I'd probably say, hey, you know, buddy, people, you're the experience that you have is valuable enough to at least share it with people.
Totally.
And, you know, I think maybe I would have discovered it a little earlier. Who knows? But I'm glad I found it now, and I can't wait to see, yeah, what happens next. And it just, yeah, like I said, it's so fresh in my head, but I looking up and she's just smiling, and it's just rain is just pelted, like she's soaked, and yeah. Just life jacket on. I'll show you the video.
So you captured this.
Speaking
of which, is your TikTok still blowing up?
Oh, I don't know. You know, that's the one where I sort of kind of, there's still every once in a while I'll throw something on there, but you know, it's so hard with all the social media stuff. I have waves where for a couple weeks I'll throw stuff on Instagram or TikTok or YouTube. And then if I don't go sailing for a while, then you won't hear from me on those for a bit. But you know, took a lot of clips and stuff. So yeah. the one steady thing I have is the podcast, because
yeah.
If I run out, if I'm not out sailing, I'll go and just grab an old classic book and read it, an old sailing book, and then I'll do a podcast about it.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, yeah, I love that. Yeah, man, I don't know. Podcasting is so, it's so different of a social media and of a media in general than, like, I can't bring myself to hardly post 2 days in a row.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can just talk for hours with people
we're just having a conversation.
You know, it's so great.
Just happens to be some so mics, much more valuable. And we're going to just share it with everybody. I honestly, if I had to choose one thing, I shouldn't say that. It'd be pretty hard. It'd be pretty close tie between doing a podcast and doing live in-person presentations and keynote speaking. Great. Yeah,
that's such a rewarding experience.
This last fall was sort of the return to it, and I had the chance to do some keynote speaking, which is a little different.
Yeah.
So you're not just up there telling a story. You're up there trying to pull meaning and give the audience value about your story. You share your experience, but you also share what you learned. And it's usually a little shorter. You know, I'm used to being up there for an hour and be able to, you know, tell an entertaining story. Yeah. And I need to still do that, but I also need to tell them what's up and why this is good and why you're listening to me and my advice, which is kind of counterintuitive to me, but at the same time, that's what they look for at you know, obviously corporate things.
I was going
to
say, what are these kind of these events that your story really works in? Who's the audience?
Oh, that's kind of the nice part. And I don't know why this is, whether it's a subject or it's just the craziness of the adventures or it's the video clips, who knows, but, every audience, literally from schools. I've done like grade schools and these kids are, you know, I lean towards, you know, showing a lot more videos of the whales and stuff like that, but they love it. Assisted living homes, all that stuff. But like corporate, high-end corporate stuff is starting to come down the pipeline, which is great because that pays for a lot of the community ones. So like a lot of times if I'll do a school or a library, that's, you know, I don't charge them anything for that. You know, I sell my book or something afterwards. But it's one of those where if I could do a corporate one, then for the rest of the month, I can book anything that's, you know, community outreach or really small speaking gigs, because a lot of sailing clubs don't have a budget for that sort of stuff, but they're a great audience. So if I can swing it where I can do both, great.
That's awesome.
And it's been, it's so far, fingers crossed, 2024 is going to be like the big year, the biggest year I've ever had with it. So,
wow.
It's been.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. And I mean, to the same tune of what we've been talking about, those 3 years of struggle from 2020.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Like I was so close to giving up, but.
Meaning not sailing anymore?
No. With the presentations, pursuing that as sort of a main source of income and like a career. Because obviously you can't sail your whole life, but you can share your experiences standing or even sitting on a stage. You can do that until you can't talk anymore, which hopefully doesn't happen for a long time.
That'd be a tragedy.
That would.
Yeah, I could write. I'd continue writing. But no, that's so you made it through your own storm, 3 year storm.
Yeah, I did. I sure was close. And I don't know, it was kind of funny thinking about it now. Going through that the last year, shortly after I was here, was when my back just instantly kind of, it's like the sciatic nerve. But essentially, within weeks of being down here after that disaster voyage, the physical repercussions manifested themselves and constant pain in my back and in my leg for the entire year of 2023, to the point where I could barely walk.
Oh, my goodness.
I'd be bent over. I had to see chiropractors. I had to do all this stuff. And the depression that comes along with constant chronic pain, I have never experienced before. And coupling that with, you know, an uncertain, shaky future, and I didn't know if I'd be able to go offshore, sail much anymore, because, you know, it was just painful. And finally, to sort of be able to break through that and get back to a non-pain sort of thing. And this is pretty recent. I mean, I was able to run like 3 miles today, and I hadn't been able to do that since back in 2022.
Wow.
And it's been a struggle to get through. So it was like, you know, Mother Nature or God, the world essentially put me right to the edge where I was like, I am so done with all this. And somehow just barely made it through. And now it seems like, I mean, I'm stoked. I'm ready to just keep launching into this year. So
wow. You know, we recently had a guy that through hiked the AT with chronic pain, and it was a very inspiring story.
Oh, really?
Just like dealing with it and what is that like? And, you know, adaptations to the experience.
Uh-huh.
And chronic lead came from a motorcycle accident. And it just sounded, I got a lot of feedback from that one.
Yeah.
About people who are like, oh my God, I didn't realize I could still dream this big with, you know, dealing with this pain. And he's got a book out that goes into a lot more detail, but it was, people like that just give me hope that, okay, you know, I'm not going through anything like that right now, but if I ever do,
there's ways, yeah.
There's all these stories out there that I'm going to like, those are the books I'm going to pick up off the shelf.
Yep.
And really lean into. So it's like, you know, that sounds like, I didn't realize all that.
Oh, it was pretty bad. I mean, obviously it could have been worse. But it's just one of those things where I've often dealt with the mental, aspects that come with, you know, trauma out at sea and dealing with some of those situations and everything. Yeah. But the physical aspect I never had to really deal with, and to have it affect me in such a way that, you know, the norm of, yeah, I do a decent amount of exercise and that keeps my, you know, happiness level up and all sort of stuff, and you stay healthy and all that, to just not being able to do any of that. And it was just a compiling of like, your situation is going to be really bad and it hurts all the time, and this could be you for the rest of your life, because for a long time it just didn't seem like we would be able to fix it. And finally, whatever, the chiropractor and the stretching exercises and the core workouts that you painfully go through. I mean, when I first finally was able to get back on a treadmill, it started out at 3 minutes. I could do that at like a walking pace. And then the next day it'd be 5 minutes. And the next day it'd be 4 minutes because I did it too much. You know, that sort of yeah. thing. But I don't know. Wow. That was a really, I don't know. It just came out of left field, because at first I thought I was just going to be okay after that trip. And then that came up and it just threw me for a tailspin. So it gave me, like you say, it gave me a lot of, I guess, just awareness that, you know, when somebody's going through pain, like physical pain, it affects everything.
Mm.
Just every minute of every day, you're like, you can feel that, and it just, yeah, it draws on you. Oof.
I'm probably like holding on all the time on a boat, just wears you out.
Yeah, you know? Right.
Jeez, yeah. Now I've gone through some serious depressions of episodes, and I describe it to people, for my experience, it was like I feel like I just got sick one day. And then this, it was like you caught a disease,
right,
from an animal or something, or just like you weren't planning on it, you know, you weren't even thinking that was a possibility, and all of a sudden you got it, and you're like, it's your new reality.
Well, and you don't have the control switch.
No. You can't say, oh, I did this. This is what caused it. It was like, oh my gosh, yeah, okay. Now I have Lyme's disease or whatever. I don't know. Like, now I got to deal with it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And all the things that go into that.
Uh huh.
And for you, it's, I don't know. Did you have an injury or did it just happen?
I think when everything got piled on top of me, I think something, I definitely got bounced when the boat flipped upside down. Yeah. And the following day, because the big board called a lee board, which is what would keep me in my bunk, snapped in half. The next day I was asleep and a wave, kind of just a small wave, rocked the boat and tossed me onto the cabin floor. And, you know, it's like a 2-foot drop, but if you're dead asleep and you hit the, you know, hit the floor, you basically fall flat on it on your back.
Yeah.
I think that might've affected some disc or whatever. I don't know.
And it came up later. Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately. Yeah. I'm I'm sure a lot of adventurers are in the same sort of boat. I don't have like health insurance or anything, so it's like an MRI is like out of the question. It's like no way, I need new sails, man.
Right I gotta keep doing
it. But a chiropractor, $50, we'll see what he says.
You can do it.
So yeah.
Wow. Well, anything else you wanted to get off your chest?
No, I tell you, it's great to be invited in here, and I don't know, it's like a therapy session, Mason. I love it.
Gosh, yeah, therapy that you share with the world.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I love it. Awesome.
First of all, thank you so much for listening. It means the world to us that you choose to listen to this show. If you'd like to help us further, you can leave a review on iTunes, share us with your friends, your family. It goes a long way to grow in the show. You can also support us financially through patreon.com/adventuresportspodcast. Link is in the show notes. And also, if you have an idea of who could be a good guest for the show, we're always looking for people to tell their story about the outdoors or adventure. So if you know someone, please reach out. Email us at info@adventuresportspodcast.com. And until then, get out there and have some fun.